Hello, and welcome to NARC, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborators, is what that stands for. And it's the part of NARC Troopers. NARC Troopers is the name of my website, my business that I have, publishing articles, podcasts, YouTube video vlogs, Instagram reels and shorts, TikTok videos, you name it. I have some courses. I do sessions with consulting, all kinds of stuff. And it's NARC Troopers. We're troopers because we're soldiers and warriors marching onwards through our recovery. And it's Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborators means I collab with a lot of different people. I collab with mental health professionals and doctors and psychologists and academics and all kinds of people who kind of help us shed light on this horrible thing that we're going through. So if you're listening to this, I'm assuming that you're probably either know someone who is a victim of narcissistic abuse, or you yourself are in recovery from that. And today we're going to talk about how attachment styles impact trauma recovery. Because we all know, I know you've heard about attachment styles, that's nothing new. But we're going to talk about when you have trauma, either long-term complex trauma from like years and years through your childhood and stuff, but also the kind of trauma that happens in these relationships with the narcissist or the psychopath or the sociopath. And sometimes they're more short-lived, but nonetheless, they are pretty damaging. So all people discover if they can depend on others to keep them safe or not. And this all begins at a very early age, right? When you're little, your nervous system either grows with the idea that you're inherently, intrinsically lovable and protected, or it drives you to learn coping mechanisms to deal with emotional pain and danger if you don't feel validated, accepted, or safe. Safety is really a big deal with me. I operate all these years from a place of not feeling safe, from feeling disconnected, little bit dissociated, outside the, you know, belonging, and outside having my tribe or support group or family, whatever you want to call. So safety is huge. Much more of a big deal than you would think. You know, these first emotions in response to whatever the environment is, you know, that shapes us, it affects our entire life, since, you know, we have to carry these foundational beliefs in our minds, in our bodies, our nervous system, and of course our emotions. Attachment styles form in childhood and act as a model for navigating life and relationships in adulthood. Secure attachment teaches your nervous system how to regulate itself by understanding what healthy behavior and relationships look like. Hopefully, you're going to learn that you're never really alone and you can weather any storm of emotions and still feel secure and confident. You feel okay. You feel safe. And then some of us didn't get that, you know. Attachment styles are categories. They're categories for different degrees of emotional security and safety in your relationships from the very beginning until now. They have an impact on how you respond to all the negative stimuli that is around you, which is an inevitable part of life, right? You're always going to have things, you know, kick you in the seat of the pants, knock you down, punch you in the face, whatever. And so how you react to that, you know, your response to it, it's, you know, kind of reflects what your attachment styles are. And that also includes trauma, by the way, how you respond to trauma. The ability to regulate your emotions is not just baked in. It's taught. It's learned in your earliest relationships. It's ingrained throughout your childhood, and it's practiced throughout life. A person who doesn't have a secure attachment style, where they have always felt seen and heard and validated by their inner circle, is more likely to have difficulty recovering from trauma or grief. Well, of course they're going to have more difficult, because when trauma or grief comes, it just shakes them to the core and they feel so unsafe. They don't have the underpinnings. They don't have the foundational structure to deal with it. They don't know how to navigate that. So several researchers recently explored the relationship between post-traumatic recovery and attachment style. And most of us coming out of relationships with a narcissist or a cluster B person, we're having this post-traumatic recovery. And these researchers, the two studies suggest that a higher level of attachment avoidance was related to lower post-traumatic growth in individuals who suffered from life-threatening trauma or life-altering loss. So when you go through something that is like huge, like what you have gone through with the narcissist or psychopath, something that is that transformationally, life-changingly horrific, when you go through something that is that life-altering and traumatic, the studies say that if you have a higher level of attachment avoidance, it was related to lower post-traumatic growth and recovery. Okay? We need to absorb that statement. Many times these individuals with attachment styles that are not optimally like healthy or whatever, it doesn't prepare them to emotionally regulate through life's trials and tribulations, vicissitudes, all that stuff. You know, life is cruel sometimes, and if you don't have, you don't have healthy attachment styles, you're going to have a hard time when the hard times come. And certainly not, you're not going to know how to deal with narcissistic abuse, because that's like the top of every, that's like the worst thing that can happen in many ways, as far as suffering loss or abuse or something like that. And, you know, I don't mean to offend anybody by saying it's the worst, but, you know, it's worse than losing a parent or a child or a family member, because it is like losing your mother. It's like losing your child. It's like losing yourself. It's like losing all of that all at once, simultaneously. So unless your whole family got wiped out all at the same time, and you were mortally wounded in a way that you're never going to recover, ever, you're going to be not okay. Unless that happened, then really narcissistic abuse ranks up there. It's just like it's more difficult, because you lose so many different parts of your, see, I'm having trouble figuring out how to say this, because you lose like the parent, the child, and yourself all at once. Like I just said, I can't think of another way to say that. And, but that's true. You're losing multiple, things, and it's just too much. You know, you struggle to heal because the invalidation and objectification and other mistreatment from the narcissist tends to confirm your fears and doubts, and it makes you feel unseen and unheard all over again, which reckons back to infancy when you were not seen or heard. So it's almost like the abusive treatment by the narcissist acts as proof of your worst fears. You know, you feel insecure, threatened, undeserving, to blame, maybe culpable, unable to control your emotions, and that just crumble after a relationship with one of these kinds of people. Only about 60% of adults have secure attachment styles. That means 40% don't. And so when these bad things happen, they are not equipped to get through it. The other 40%, they fall into one of these attachment styles. They're either avoidant or they're anxious / insecure. So let's talk about those. Avoidant attachment style has a tendency to mistrust others' motives for what they're doing and their goodwill, and thus they attempt to maintain emotional distance in relationships. They differ from the fearful avoidant attachment style because they do not desire attachment, while the disorganized one does. The anxious, insecure attachment style tends to be dependent on their relationships, constantly worrying that others will be unavailable or abandon them in situations of need, and they carry a lot of anxiety and fear, high anxiety and fear. And, you know, a lot of times I would say it's the codependent borderline person or borderline and codependent who have the anxious, insecure attachment. And it more times than not, it is the narcissist, psychopath, who has more of a avoidant attachment. And, you know, it goes beyond that. Yeah, they have avoidant attachment. They also have something called flat attachment because they don't attach at all. Not at all. Not even at all. A little bit. Nothing. Like, there's no attachment. So, and that's called flat attachment. And that's what is characterized by those disorders. Or those disorders are characterized by flat attachment. So, let's talk about secure attachment. Secure attachment results from children having a loving connection with their caregivers, which helps them apply it to others in order to form healthy relationships. You know, they copy it, they absorb that, ingrain that, and then that becomes their template. Yeah, it's like a template that they use to fill in for themselves as they become adults. This attachment style does not lead to fear of abandonment and makes people unafraid to connect with others. This is the attachment style we all wish we had, but we cannot because of whatever happened in early childhood that interrupted our healthy development. Narcissists have an avoidant attachment style in addition to the flat attachment style. And most people who are strongly affected by a narcissist are of the anxious attachment style. And both are likely to have experienced trauma and abuse that prevents them from having healthy attachment styles. Now, there is much discussion about the ways that trauma shapes attachment, but how do attachment styles impact recovery from trauma and grief? That is the question of the day. Okay, so, except for trauma care that is caused by natural disasters, all trauma happens in relationships. Trauma is a relationship wound, and your attachment style highly affects your ability to recover from it, from the trauma. In all of the insecure attachment styles, The ability to regulate emotion never got developed. The ability to handle life's losses, disappointments, and change are encoded in the nervous system only in secure attachment styles. If you have this insecure attachment style and traumatic experience happens, there's no mechanism in place from a secure attachment to resolve it. That's why those with insecure attachment often resort to self-destructive, self-harming, self-trashing strategies to cope with life's difficulties and setbacks. They are simply lacking the ingrained, inherent core programming that provides them the tools to cope. And I will go on to say that a vast number of people who become entangled with individuals who have NPD, sociopathy, or psychopathy probably have insecure attachment, just as their predatory disordered partner also has unhealthy ones. Both cannot fill their cups from the inside. That's what they have in common. And both must seek external sources to make them feel whole and human. They can't generate it or manufacture it from within. They have to look outside to external sources to provide that. Both are lacking these things in their core that allow them to navigate life smoothly. Take away their external source of validation and all cluster B disordered people fall apart. This includes borderlines and histrionics as well, who are also share that cluster B designation. Now, different categories of ailments in cluster B have a different prognosis. Some of them are somewhat treatable. Some of them sort of dissipate as they reach middle age. Some of them resolve in other ways, do some cognitive behavioral therapy or through some whatever, something that a lot of hard work. But the narcissists, the psychopath, and the sociopath do not have these positive outcomes at all. They cannot seem to do better, be better, do different, be different. They just, I mean, it is what it is. They are what they are. And then, you know, a lot of people say that dialectical behavioral therapy and things like emotions-focused therapy, which is EFT, work well in helping clients learn to self-validate and feel whole without, you know, looking outside themselves externally all the time. Somatic therapies that deal with the body, that's what somatic means, that is physical body, address trauma that can be held in the body and can be also very powerful. EMDR, eye movement desensitization and processing, it works for a lot of people. And creative therapies with art, music, movement, all that kind of stuff. Dance, it's an effective choice to try. You can also look at energy work through grounding, meditation, breath work, pranic healing, Reiki, and all different other kinds of stuff to give you some relief. So it's a smorgasbord, yep, of different things that you can do to try to build up your ability to self-validate and to fill yourself up from the inside instead of trying to look for somebody else to do it and then assuming a position of learned helplessness and dependency upon that person who is feeding off of you. So it's important to try new modalities for treatments, and you know, a treatment plan with a team of providers and professionals can help. I don't think it's a one-man job or one-woman job. Group therapy with others has, you know, who've also been through the same thing and experienced trauma and who are in recovery, you speak the same language, and that can be tremendously supportive in ways that other people, they can't do it. They can't be that person because they don't understand what you're experiencing. They don't even really believe that it's really happening that way. They just don't get it. So, you know, eventually through trial and error, you develop your healing portfolio with the things that work. And when you practice them daily, you get results. So like all things you choose to pursue for self-improvement, you have to just remember to stick with it. And if you have an off day, show yourself some compassion and grace, and then just get right back into the saddle and soldier on. Most mental health professionals agree that attachment styles can be modified to a large degree. Just because you have a certain kind right now doesn't mean you're going to have to live and die that way. You can learn how to create boundaries, create safe space, self-advocacy, all of these things you can learn to do that can change your attachment style. You learn to survive and not let your, let's say, insecure attachment or other issues impede your ability to design a life that's complete and wholesome and happy. You know, we all deserve peace and peace of mind. For some, it's just a lot harder to get to that place because of the things that have happened and how we have been programmed and scripted from a young age to be a certain way. I want to tell you this in conclusion. I read this great book, and this is just a random thought. Stream of consciousness, guys. Eric Byrne, I don't know if any of you are as old as I am, but he was popular in the 70s and 80s, late 70s and 80s, and he wrote a book called The Games People Play. And, you know, I just thought it was a brilliant book. It was one of the first psychology books that I read that really resonated with me. And, you know, I think that some of the things that he offers about different personality styles and how we deal with things was very illuminating. And so we can change how we react to things, you know, and we can adapt and evolve and learn different ways to have interpersonal relationships that are real and not dysfunctional and toxic and crazy. And so, yeah, I want to put that on your radar. Eric Byrne, one of his contemporaries, Claude Steiner, wrote a book called I'm Okay, You're Okay. And he was sort of like one of the fathers of transactional analysis, which essentially has been reinvented multiple times since the 70s. When he first talked about it, he had this PAC kind of Venn diagram thing where he talked about parent, adult, and child and how we function in these different ego states. Well, let's remember something. The narcissist is all id and has no ego, no self, no identity. He's all, or she, is all id. You should look into that. It's a little bit of a departure from your standard lectures and explanations about narcissism, but it's really interesting to look at that, because we do play different roles. Like they talk about the persecutor, the rescuer, and the victim. Both Byrne and Steiner talked about that a lot in the 70s and early 80s. And the parent, adult, and child roles that we play. And, you know, we use that in discussing narcissism because we play the parent to each other. Right? We parentify. The narcissist becomes your mother and you become their mother. And y'all are parenting each other mutually at the same time in that shared fantasy. So a lot of the concepts that and the language comes from those 1970s books on transactional analysis and the roles people play, the games people play, and all of that kind of stuff. Such great books. And you know, that kind of lit the fire for me back in the 70s to be studying psychology and getting a degree in guidance, counseling, you know, those kinds of fields to try to, you know, figure out what makes people tick. And this was before I became focused on just the niche area of narcissistic abuse recovery, because that's, you know, guys, that's all I do now is narcissistic abuse recovery. All the other things I've studied, things that I have been trained to do, know to do, know about, have sort of fallen away. And all of my energy, all of my focus, 110% is just on narcissistic abuse recovery, because it is so misunderstood. There's so much misinformation and disinformation out there. It's mind-boggling how much stuff is just floating around on social media that is simply not true. And I have even heard, I've even read a couple of doctors that have posted online, and what they have said is simply not true. I don't know whether it's something that they need to have as a lived experience in order to understand it, or if they just never went to narcissistic disorder, like in-depth studies, or I don't know. Some of them say they're trained. I don't think so. Or if they were trained, I don't know who trained them, because they have some wrong information. You know, my one go-to person, and I just, you know, I hate to keep bringing him up, but it's Dr. Sam Vaknin. You know, I don't think he's ever said anything in any of his lectures that wasn't researched and thoroughly vetted, the people saying it, and studied and researched again and published and quoted. And, like, you know, he knows what he's talking about. And I have never caught him putting anything out there that was not 110% true. That is my go-to place to find expert understanding, deep, deep understanding of what is narcissistic personality disorder, what is a cluster B dark triad, what happens to the people that are involved, that are enmeshed, that are entrained by these cluster B people. And he's the authority. He's your man. And if you listen to one video a day for like a year, it's going to give you like so much power, little Pac-Man pellets, ammunition, whatever you want to call it. It's like feeding you knowledge to help you be able to stand up and fight back and understand what it is that has happened to you and what it is that you can do about it to move on. Yep. So that's how I want to end today. Obviously, attachment styles. I probably didn't really talk about anything new. You knew already probably about healthy ones and anxious ones and, you know, all the different kinds of attachment styles. But I just want to say that there's a connectivity, an interplay, a relationship between attachment styles and how we are able to recover. And the narcissist has flat attachment, and we as codependent people, probably, I'm going to guess that the vast majority of people at this point realize that they may have some codependency, or they wouldn't have ended up in this boat in the first place. You know, we have insecure, anxious, abandonment issue kind of attachment styles. I don't know the number on that, so I'm not going to just throw something out there, but it's a lot. And I believe I'm quite certain it's the majority. I'm sure it's not everyone. Of course it's not everyone. What things are absolute, really, but it's the majority, and that's what counts. So let's learn it, let's live it, let's get through this, troopers, and I will talk to you again soon. Thank you so much for being here, and let's spread the word, guys, and spread the truth. Use your voice. Love you. Bye.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.